Hello and welcome back to the Women's Soccer Podcast. I'm your host, Liam Greco, but you may know me better as LTG. As transfer window, my favorite season of year, is underway, I figured it would be so much fun to just go over everything that's happened so far. On Monday, we posted an episode about the European side of the window, so now that the NWSL kind of moves are kicking up and getting into full force, I figured we have to recap them here. So without further ado, let's start with these moves. So before I want to go into the episode, I want to clarify one thing. So since on episode 76, we talked about 10 European moves, but we also talked about Julia Gross's move coming to the Red Stars. I won't be talking about it that much in this episode at all, to be honest. Probably I won't be. So if you want to hear about Julia Grosso, listen into episode 76. But if not, if you also want to hear other NWSL moves, you can listen to both. I mean, I'd love for you to listen to both. So I'm going to start today's episode talking about the Spirit because I think they've been like the biggest players in the window so far, and I'll explain why. First of all, I think they've had the best approach. They already have such a top quality side that's putting them in the race for a home playoff game, that top four area. But bringing in one player in each of the three field player lines is really, really good because it deepens the squad and gives depth. When you look at the difference between a good team and a great team, it's not about the 11 players who start in the field, it's about the 11 players that finish. On a good team, those 11 players, there's a significant drop off because the five players that come in as subs aren't nearly as good as the five players that come out. However, on a very, very good team, like what we saw with Gotham last year, Portland the year before, the bench should be able to compensate for the starters, and you shouldn't lose any steam. Players are coming in off the bench. You expect that quality to maintain a specific level. And I think for Washington, we've seen this season the reliance on rookie players, which has been working for them. But at the end of the day, the experience does matter in a side. And I think the problem with Washington's quality right now is that when they're playing these top teams, they don't exactly have the experienced firepower like Kansas City or like Orlando has. When you look at the leaders that Kansas City and Orlando possess, players like Marta, Lola Bonta, these are true leaders. And I think the problem that the Spirits are having right now is due to the fact that yes, they have Kingsbury and Gold, who's a leader, but so is France. She's a leader as well for Kansas City. And the reality is having those field players who can be leaders is so, so important. And bringing in these young players that can be grown up to these leadership roles is incredibly important. I'll first start out the defensive move. Esme Morgan moves from Manchester City to Washington Spirit. First of all, this move speaks a very high amount of how Michelle King's investment in women's football is carrying over not just to her European side in Olympic Lyonnais, but also to Washington Spirit. The reality is that even though the prestige in men's football is clearly leaning towards Europe rather than North America, women's football was built in the United States of America far before it was built anywhere else. We have the 99ers. We have a lot more longevity and history in this game. And so at the end of the day, even if we aren't anymore the only top league for women's football, we are still the league that started it all. And that is undeniable. 10 years ago, the WSL wasn't even a professional league and the NWSL was already working. And I think that speaks magnitudes to how this league is growing. And I think that the whole independent club model really speaks a lot to players because they want to feel treated preferably. And the reality is in the men's football model, men's team will always get preferred treatment because that's the way it is. The men's team are filling out the stadiums. And unfortunately for European women's football, that isn't happening on a consistent enough basis. And that's not due to the quality of play. It's due to the fact that the clubs don't really invest in women's football because they have this money coming in, billions and billions, millions and millions, sometimes for clubs, billions of dollars coming in for the men's football game, which they've reinvested in women's football. But as a player, it's not just about the money, it's about the facilities. And when you see the examples of Manchester United women, it really illustrates why players are flocking over to the US and not rather coming to the WSL like they were a few years ago. So I think the reason why Morgan comes here is because she wants minutes, she wants playing time. And the reality is when you look below the top few clubs in England, the lack of professionalism on and off the field is astoundingly poor. And I think when you look at the top three sides in Chelsea, Arsenal, and City, of course, those sides are always going to be preferred to many NWSL teams. But when you go below that, it does get a lot shakier because the reality is a lot of clubs, even if Manchester United has the quality to hang with them on the pitch. Off the field, it's lacking. And I think for a lot of teams, both of those areas are lacking. So it totally makes sense why Esme would come to the United States. Though in the past, we've seen Serena Wiegmann not prefer NWSL players in regards to her roster selection for England, which is a concern. That's why Ebony Salmon came back to England after moving to the NWSL, even though she was performing so beautifully there for most of her time, except for the latter stages in Houston. She didn't get the preferred minutes treatment that she would have desired in order to get a spot in the English national team. So that's one worry that Esme might have. But at the end of the day, she's still getting picked, even though she has no minutes for Manchester City right now. And so I presume that she'll still get on these rosters, even if she doesn't get a bunch of minutes immediately, because the Spirit's back line is pretty good, but it's not the strongest it could be. And bringing that more youth and experience to partner next to like a player like Tierra McKeown in the back line and Casey Kruger and Gabby Carl. If you look at the back line, once you take out Patel, it looks a lot stronger because Patel is not quick enough really to hang with the NWSL, whereas Esme's physical presence, because due to her height and also her just ball playing ability, will make her such an asset for the Spirit. Unlike Esme Morgan and the latter signing we'll be talking about today, Lacey Santos is a signing of intent for now. I think when you look at Morgan, she's still such a young player that she'll have a lot of time to grow. Same thing with when we're looking at players like Kouassi. But at the end of the day, Santos is a world-class champion. She's played at beautiful clubs around the world in regards to their male prestige, like Atletico Madrid, but we're seeing this kind of turnover of Liga FA players joining the NWSL due to the fact that the Liga FA is very unprofessional in a lot of standards. The minimum salary is half of what the NWSL's minimum salary is, and that speaks magnitudes and volumes about the level of professionalism. When we talk about players coming over to America, obviously for a lot of them, especially for European players, in this case for Santos, it's a little bit different. But the level of professionalism is still growing in Europe in comparison to NWSL. And I'm not saying we don't have our own problems, but a player like Santos wants to play in a top club that is treated seriously. And the Spirit has shown their continued investment. They've shown their continued sellout crowds. And I'm sorry, but no fan bases in Europe, except aside from Arsenal, have any of the fan base and kind of collectives for specifically the women's side that really is being drawn by many NWSL clubs. Seven clubs in NWSL have more than 10,000 fans per game. That's not the case for many clubs in Europe, but there's only two or clubs in Europe, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's actually less. I don't even think it's anyone besides Arsenal that draws more than 10,000 fans a game. And I think that continued drive and hunger for women's football that's being demonstrated, there's always going to be a ability to invest more. And Santos is a creative player who will link up beautifully in the midfield, but there are some concerns about how her introduction will affect Croy Bethune. Bethune and Lacey Santos both have very similar player profiles, being fellow 10s. Therefore, as two 10s don't play in a system together, it just doesn't work. It'll be really hard to get the best out of both of them, as Raldes is going to have to try and work these new pieces into the team as he adjusts. It'll be really awkward at moments. I think it'll be concerning for a lot of Spirit fans, especially the Bethune hive, who's like really rallied around her, but also the fact that Santos is like a much more established player internationally than Bethune. And I think that we've seen with international coaches like Emma Hayes that they really value that. Emma calls in a lot more players that play in Europe because she is European, and I think we'll expect the same thing for Aldez because he knows the style of football he wants to play, and traditionally European players will be better at that. And Lacey Santos is a lot more suited for a style of play. She's played in Liga FA. She'll know a lot more than Bethune the way that he'll want to play. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how he balances the two of them out. But overall, it's an amazing signing. Santos is such a good player in the pocket space. Really, honestly, like very similar to Bethune. If you've ever watched Bethune play, you'll kind of get the idea of Santos' game, although she's a little bit more willing to play like a lopped ball in behind rather than Bethune, who does a lot more of like lower passes to the ground through balls. Santos is more of like a quirky player in that she'll like be creative in so many different ways. She's a lot more multidimensional in the ball than Bethune, and that's not just to Bethune. Bethune does what she does really, really well, and that's a lot better, honestly, than a lot of players who are super, super creative, quote unquote. But the thing that Santos's game has that's so incredible is her like variety in the way that she passes. You as a defender, you never know what she's gonna do. And Bethune, I think that the league is kind of figured out a few different ways that Bethune plays, and she's kind of gotten taken out of games a little bit more as the season's gone on. So I hope that Geraldes can find a way to get the two of them working together in a system, because these two players are both way too good to keep off the field. In three of the last five of the Spirits games, they've scored one goal or less. Therefore, it was evident that they were going to try and make some changes to the front line, and it worked. They made some internal changes, moving McKenna Omoros up, who got a goal, an assist, and drew a penalty, which led to the Trittany Rodman goal. However, some teams have found out ways to take Bethune out of the game, and I'm going to use an example of the Courage game. When you look at the game against North Carolina Courage, that was only two match days ago, Bethune rarely got on the ball. She wasn't able to make a huge impact, and subsequently, the Spirit struggled. My point being is that without Bethune, they struggle. And the fact is with Santos coming in, Bethune's role is either going to be a lot more limited or just very different. And I'm worried about how that will affect her. And if they continue playing Bethune in the same role, I'm worried how it'll affect Santos. But I did promise we're moving on to the front line. So I want to talk about Rosemond Kouassi, who's a player who's played for Fleury in France. I actually has had her on my radar for a while of coming to NWSL, because I knew from previous reports from Soccer Donna, who's like the main transfer, I guess, resource I use for a lot of these episodes, that she was looking at the NWSL. However, I had a lot more teams that were lower in the table in mind for her. I thought that a team like maybe Seattle or Utah would swipe her, but I guess the fact is Michelle Kang's growing presence in France and has not just helped her in Europe, but has also helped her get a lot of players from that area. And we're seeing more players from Ligue FA come to the NWSL. But the reality is the French league is even less professional than Ligue FA. So to get some players from D1 Arkema coming in, and that's a very talented pool of talent that's there. So it's really good to see that NWSL continue to use these players that are underrepresented in the grand scheme of things. There's so much talent that rarely gets a chance to play on the continental stage in the Champions League, because a lot of teams lower in the league have one or two really, really good players and the rest of the side struggles. And for an NWSL team, you can easily just swipe one of those players because you can make a much more prominent offer money-wise. I'm looking at Ana Tejada, who a Spanish journalist said, like David Minaya, I think. I don't know how to pronounce his name properly, I'm pretty sure, but he said Tejada got paid twice her salary when she went to Utah Royals than what she was getting paid before at Real Sociedad. And that's a top club in men's football. So it really tells you a lot about that. The NWSL has the money, and by investing it in these players, they will get wonders in returns. And not just by signing her. Kouassi is a player who is amazing in front of that. There was brief Arsenal links that she had, although the system for non-United Kingdom players to get into the league is so complicated. A lot of times clubs might just give up on transfers for younger players that from less established nations globally because of the fact that they won't have enough points for the point system. And so that definitely has helped the NWSL get a lot of the African talent we've seen coming to the league. And that is going to be so crucial for the NWSL to continue maintaining the top professional competition for USA players and overall just continue to grow the talent level in the league. As we talk about this often, there's a lot of solid players that are American, but at the end of the day, to be a top professional league, we see this as the Premier League of the men's side. They are undeniably the best men's league because of the international talent that's spread out on every single team. And with the increased international spot allocations, it's good to see teams not being afraid to use all up seven spots. A lot of them now actually are only up to five, which I'm disappointed about, because there is, at the end of the day, now the USL Super League. So that changes a lot of things, and that if a player gets cut from the NWSL, then to get replaced by an international player, then the USL Super League is there for them. So there are more opportunities, which makes me, I guess, a little bit more stubborn on pushing the international agenda, because a lot of the time the biggest argument against it is, well, the NWSL players may lose their contracts, but there's now another option for them. And at the end of the day, for the league to continue growing and expanding, international talent is a necessity. Football is a worldwide game. It's not America's game. I know we're the Women's Soccer Podcast. That's so American of me to name it like that. But at the end of the day, it's a world's game, football. And we can't establish ourselves as a world power internationally if all of our players that play for the national team are playing at club level in this bubble world and all this new kind of talent coming into the league with different types of styles of football. Like, for instance, Rosemond's style is a lot more direct, which suits the NWSL, but I love her ability to shoot from long range with both her left and right foot. She's not afraid to pull the trigger on shooting. She is really good at making runs in behind. She's the kind of player who I think will really fit in to a direct style of football more rather than the possession-based style that FC Fleury was playing a lot more last season. So that'll be a really good change for her style of football, and it'll honestly just allow the system that the Spirit play to get the best out of her. Obviously, Geraldo has played a much more possession-style game with Barcelona, but that was due to the talent that she had. At the end of the day, as a coach, when you're coming into an established team, you have to work with what you have. And I would love to see him continue using direct play because of the quick players the Spirit have in behind. Players like Trittany Rodman, Saar. Now, Kouassi coming into the system, I am much more inclined for the Spirit to continue playing direct. We have so many amazing players in that squad that could do that. Players like Carl and Kruger can get up the flanks. Hirschfeld and Sullivan are great at playing outlet passes. Bethune is just going to supply players in behind. Same with Lacey Santos. So that direct style football that I'm really, really hoping the Spirit continue to try and build will be so instrumental for them as they hope to get to the playoffs this season. I want to now move on to the Courage because they've also made a lot of moves this window, even though they've been a little bit overshadowed, in my opinion, by Washington because of the high-profile international players coming in. But at the end of the day, Courage didn't really need to add a lot more to their defense. It's very sound with the backline pairing of Kurtz and Berkeley. It's good. Obviously, McLean will add some backline depth there and she'll fit into the style of play perfectly. She's someone who's really good with her feet, but the main thing they wanted to focus on was goals. And obviously, Menaka is a player who has been so important since coming in her build-up, yes, but also she's someone who's a cold finisher in front of net. She can score from anywhere in her own half, it feels. So it's just an amazing signing for the Courage to instill that confidence in young players. And Menaka is still only a teenager. So that shows me a lot about how the Courage are looking to be successful now, but also show investment in the future of their club because they do have a lot of older players in their team, but they also are building something with youth. And I think that kind of dynamic group of young players that have gone into this team, even people like Riley Jackson and Brianna Pinto, two players who have played significantly bigger roles this season, really instills a lot of confidence in me. And I obviously am very fond of Sean Nahas, who has proven his qualities as a tactical manager, but also it's good to see him kind of put his mark on the side with the signings. He did that this offseason as well, don't get me wrong, bringing in players like Felipe Rao, Bianca St. George, and many more. But that seemed very veteran-focused. Not even veteran-focused, but just experience. And I liked seeing this now investment in the youth. And I really like that the fact that Menaka gets to stay here on a permanent deal because I thought she's been sublime ever since she joined the Courage. But there's obviously another move we have to talk about, which Courtney Vine, still pretty young in general, only a few years younger than St. George, but the international experience she has, it makes her wise beyond her years technically. Her football IQ is brilliant. She can get in behind. Again, we talked about Kouassi earlier and how her football style of football is just so suited for the NWSL. I'll say the same thing about Courtney Vine. We talk a lot about this, how players lacking physicality can take a long time to adjust to the significantly quicker speed of play in the NWSL than abroad. But the thing with Vine is her style of football really just complements what the Courage are building. The Courage love to play a possession-style football from the back, but they also have this kind of direct element to them in the final third, a tiki-taka element, I should say. Like, wing players can get out wide, dribble, play defenders 1v1, players can get into the box and look at that service, and I think the biggest thing that really signifies, and symbolizes, what the Courage want to do in their style of football is their goal that they scored against Louisville, the Sanchez goal, where they had amazing, I think it was almost 10 passes in between each other, building from the back, but being direct at the same time. I love how they're really balancing the directness in order to get as many chances as possible, but also doing it patiently and waiting for the opportunity. And that kind of football is what Menaka has helped built at the Courage, and so I think it would be silly for her not to stay on a permanent, which is why I'm happy they made this move. But again, the goals have struggled to come for the Courage. They've been winning a lot of games at home, away they've really struggled, but the thing is the games that they're winning, they're not winning by large margins. Their defense is holding on amazingly, but at the end of the day, when you play more top quality competition, the NWSL is not have that parity this year. So a lot of the teams that they played so far have been lower in the table. But when they move on to the talents like teams and talents like Orlando more, we obviously saw them get crushed by Orlando when they played, because their defense couldn't hold on to Banda for the whole game, and they weren't able to create the chances they needed. So someone like Vine, who can just be a baller, a goal scorer, will really, really help this Courage team going forward. And I think looking at the prospects of a front line that can have players like St. George, Lucy, alongside Caroline and Courtney Vine, has to have a lot of Courage fans feeling great, as the midfield behind them will be amazing as well. If Minaka, O'Sullivan, and Narumi, and that back line of Rao, Berkeley, Kurtz, and Williams with Murphy and Nett, that's a title competing team right there. And although the Current and Orlando Pride have been a level above, when Vine and Caroline come back, and if this Courage team continues to click and start to get back to that form we know and love from them, it'll be a hard opponent for anyone to face. And that is where you want to be clicking at the end of the year, is when you want to have your momentum rise. So if the Courage can continue to get these good results on the table, build more in the Summer Cup, it'll be a hard opponent for anyone to play in the championship game. I don't care if you're Kansas City, Orlando, that leafliness that the front line will have, along with the stability in the back line, they're a very well-built roster with a very talented head coach, and I'm very excited to see how the Courage continue to integrate these new pieces into their team. Moving on to a goalkeeper move, it's Mackenzie Arnold to the Portland Thorns. The Thorns have struggled defensively this season, not necessarily with giving up goals, but more of stability, because they've continued to rotate their side. A lot of new young defenders have taken a big role in the back line, like Elizabeth Abaye, Nicole Payne, and more. And I think it's weird to see this kind of turnover in generation of the foreign back line. We used to know all the players like Klingberg and Sauerland to be the centerpieces of it, but that's just not the case anymore. And the real concerning thing for me, at least, has been the goalkeeping role. Obviously, opening day is the worst part of it. Shelby Hogan making some horrendous errors that were hard to watch, but she hasn't exactly gotten that much better over the course of the season. She's been fine, but adding a goalkeeper like Mackenzie Arnold is not an opportunity you're going to pass. And a lot of fans are talking about how, yeah, they have six goalkeepers now, but they can just easily cut three of them. And a goalkeeper like Arnold is one of the best in the world, and you just don't pass the opportunity. When you have the chance to bring a player of that quality to your team, you're not going to skip that. And the reality is their goalkeeping was one of the worst situations in the league right now, and they needed to make a change. They did make the change. They brought in Emily Alvarado during the last transfer window, but she never started, so I guess that they never really just preferred her in that situation. But I do think bringing in Arnold will be good, because they'll have a more experienced keeper. Hogan is still developing. She's such a young player. This is one of her first seasons being the main starter. So it's good for the Thorns team so they can have an experienced goalkeeper to help guide this back line that's going to be going through a continuous turnover. And I think now, seeing that the Thorns have invested in bringing Nicole Payne in here full-time, they clearly like what they're seeing from these youngsters, but they do want to have a leader in that back line who can kind of orchestrate for them. And Arnold's shot-stopping ability and leadership will both be instrumental for this side as they continue pushing. Obviously, West Ham was in the relegation battle, so for Arnold, her stats will be a little bit wonky just because of that. She's an amazing goalkeeper, and I wouldn't worry too much about her bad statistics from West Ham, because she, at the end of the day, was still a really, really good shot stopper. She just faced a lot of shots, which will prepare her for the NWSL, and hopefully the Thorns' much more dynamic offense than West Ham will carry them, and their defense is also a lot better than West Ham. So I'm not worried about Arnold, even though I saw some fans critique her stats. She's an amazing goalkeeper, and I can't wait to see how she fits into the Thorns team. I wanted to move on to the Utah Royals, because they made a few big moves over the last week, which is why I waited for today, because I knew that there was going to be something that would drop, and there certainly was. Claudia Zorazona, who is a formerly Real Madrid midfielder, moves over to the NWSL. This is a very exciting move for the Royals because it adds more experience in the midfield beside Amandine Henry. Look, moving forward specifically, Zorazona is more of a box 8-8, whereas Henry was playing in that role where she's best suited, in my opinion, in the six, where she can distribute. And I think now with Zorazona coming in, she'll add another option in the midfield that can help create and also can shoot from long range. I'd love to see the midfield trio of Fodier, Zorazona, and Henri with Frazier playing up top alongside Setnor and the new signing we'll talk about in a minute, because those six together would be so dynamic. And overall, I love how Utah continues to build, investing in talent. I think the fact that they went in for Anna Tejada and Macy Frazier, two younger players in the latter window, in the first window, it shows me how in the latter window they invested more in experience, and they brought in players like Sorozona, who's 33, and their second signing, Amina Tanaka. Tanaka has so much international experience, scoring multiple goals of Japan at various Women's World Cups. Tanaka is a proven goal scorer in front of net, has plenty of experience at the international level, which will be really beneficial for the Royals, who have really struggled to score goals. Overall, these two signings show me how the Royals are becoming less patient with the younger options they have, and they want goals now, and bringing in a creator who can help them get that, and then also someone who's amazing at finishing in front of net. Overall, love both of these signings, considering they're both free agent signings as well, means they're very budget friendly. Obviously, Sorozona's a little bit older now at 33, but she'll still have the top quality to succeed in Utah, and I cannot wait to see how this Royals team will look during the Summer Cup with Sorozona coming in, and then also with Tanaka coming in after the Summer Cup as she returns from the Olympics. Overall, though, two signings that were needed for this Royals team is more attacking threat, and goal production would be very, very helpful for this Royals team as they try to solidify themselves as just merely a team that can compete in the NWSL. This last segment is about the rumored moves that are happening, and this is a really fun one because we don't know if it's gonna happen for sure, but it's funny because you get to like talk about stuff and like see whether it really happens. So first I'm gonna talk about three rumors that have happened but haven't been shut down, and then I'm gonna go on to four rumors that have been shut down, and then also talk about the two mystery Angel City signings that the LA Times alluded to but we haven't gotten yet. First, Narilla Mondesir for Seattle Reign. I think this is an interesting signing because we know the Reign need more attacking firepower, but considering they have G and Fishlock, I didn't think the midfield was where the improvements were needed, and Mondesir coming in has a similar profile to a player like Fishlock and G Soyun, so it really confuses me why they didn't go for like an out-and-out like winger or nine, because it looks like to me like this Reign team fails to like create chances first and foremost. But once they start building those chemistry and pieces and building blocks in the midfield, a midfield of Angerod, James, Fishlock, and Jisoo Yun should be good enough. It's just, for me, the front line that needs to be improved, so I guess they could play Narilla up top. But overall, paying 200 grand for someone who has not performed that exceptionally was a little bit confusing. Maybe they're just really desperate to get someone with more international experience on that front line, but overall I'm just a little bit confused for the signing. I do like Narilla. I think she's a great player. I just don't understand why the Seattle system would really work for her. As a player who's super creative, she loves the ball. Seattle system's very like direct, we play over the top, and for Narilla I don't think that would really work with her. Overall, I think I haven't seen too much of her at club level. I've more watched her internationally for Haiti, so maybe she is used to that in the French league. But from what I've seen of her team's performances, not specifically focusing on her, they do play a little bit less direct than what the Reign play. So it would be an adjustment, but I think Narilla could help to this team, maybe get some more goals and assists. We know she has the quality to do so. The real question is whether she's the profiled player that the Reign need right now, and whether she'll fit into the more rec style of play that Laura Harvey's team has to offer. I now want to move on to another rumored signing, which is just came out today again, which is super exciting, is Delphine Cascarino to the San Diego Wave. Cascarino is a multiple-time Champions League winner, one of the top prodigies of France at one point, and she has definitely produced an incredible career. Now that she's leaving Olympic Lyonnais, she's clearly looking for a new challenge, and Chelsea was the destination that many had touted for her, but recently Le Parisien mentioned that San Diego Wave outbid them. I'm very, very happy for the Wave. I mean, you're just looking at a front line that could have the aspects of players like Sanchez, Morgan, Cascarino, Shaw. This team is way too talented as a roster to not be in the playoff conversations. So for me, I think it just proves the fact that even though the Wave have been struggling lately, they're on their way back up. And when they sign Cascarino, they can still make their way back into the playoffs. They're only a few points out, even though they have been playing horrendously. So at the end of the day, golf improves this last season. All you got to do is make the playoffs, and then whatever happens, happens in the postseason. So I'm really, really excited for the signing because of how much quality Cascarino has. She's a pacey player who can get in behind in 1v1 situations, so she'll be perfect for the NWSL's more direct style of play. She'll be really, really good at playing long ball passes, which Shaw loves to do, and that's been a little bit of a weaker point for the Wave. With Morgan aging, she doesn't love making those in behind runs options anymore. And so having a player in Cascarino that can do that will be great. The wings are going to be two of the best players in the league with Cascarino and Sanchez. And up top, hopefully Alex Morgan can start getting back into goal scoring form as she'll have amazing distribution. But overall, very exciting signing for Cascarino. Cannot wait to see how she links up with many of her new, very talented teammates. And I am excited to see this continued push of European players coming to the NWSL.
The last two players you talked about are new rumors that are most likely going to happen, but I now want to focus on some broken down deals. Jennifer is a Brazilian player for Corinthians who recently got selected for the Olympic roster that was linked to Racing Louisville in April. However, no move ever materialized, and it seems unclear whether that move is still in her destiny. A young forward, Jennifer has 27 goals in 53 games at Corinthians. With an eye for goal, she spotted the eye of the Brazilian national team, getting her first ever call-up for the Sheep Leaves Cup and playing on April 6th against Canada. Jennifer is a goal scorer that would help out this Racing Louisville side tremendously, as they struggle to have a number 9 who can finish in the back of the net, with Uchenna Kanu consistently being injured and other options simply not getting the job done. Overall, this signing would have been so important for Louisville because they need another player up top who can just be reliable in scoring in front of net. Uchenna Kanu is some player who is never available for their side, and even when she's on the field, she does do a good job, but she's not the traditional 9 that the Louisville team needs. Unfortunately for them, Raylan Turner has not gotten as many minutes as they would have liked, and she continues to play well when she gets minutes, but they still are looking for another option. It's unclear to me whether they want to keep on developing Turner and focusing on that, and they don't want to bring in Jennifer, if the transfer merely just broke down, or if anything else happened that prevented the move. Overall, Jennifer, I think, is going to be a very bright player who will definitely leave Corinthians. It just depends whether an NWSL team or European team will scoop her up. But overall, due to her complete goal-scoring abilities, and if she performs well at the Olympics this summer, it wouldn't be a surprise to me at all if Jennifer can get that move done. But it feels to me like the option of moving to Racing Louisville either just never really went through, or I don't think it's really on the table anymore, because it feels like that move would have been announced by now. That's just my opinion, but again, that's one of those ones that's not like completely like a no, like the next ones we're talking about. I wanted to start with Fran Kirby because she's a player who was linked with San Diego Wave. It wasn't a very heavy link. A lot of people didn't know about it. 90 Minutes, the football website, posted about it. And I thought this was a very interesting move. And I think it would have been better if Casey Stoney was still the boss. And that may have been the reasoning for Kosovari Aslani as well. But when you look at the Wave this season, they've clearly tried to bring in an attacking phenom. Another player we'll talk about a little bit later. They lost to a championship side in the London City Lionesses. So the Wave's negotiations have been flawed in a lot of rights because they weren't able to get either their original choices. Cascarino, I think, is the best choice out of the three of them, and I'll explain why. But first of all, I want to start with Kirby. She's an England legend, but again, she is an England legend. And the same thing with the other player who I'll just reveal now, Kosovari Aslani, Swedish legend. That under these players are in their prime. They're dipping in quality, and that doesn't mean that they wouldn't have been good additions to the team. It's just that Cascarino is a player who's only 27, whereas these other players are in their early to mid-30s, and therefore their performances won't be at the highest level anymore. But for a player like Cascarino, she's a little bit younger. And even though she doesn't have all the experience that Aslani and Kirby have, she has a lot of that playmaking ability on the wing in a different right with a much faster ability, which will have made her a lot more adaptable to the NWSL's quicker speed of play. So overall, I think that the direct style wouldn't have really benefited Kirby, nor would it have benefited Aslani, who are 2-10s that love to play in the hold-up space, whereas someone like Cascarino, who loves to have the ball at her feet running behind and really just test defenders 1v1, is a much better fit. So overall, those two moves did not eventually go through, but I think that for the Wave, they still got a great player, and even if they don't get Kirby or Aslani, which are the moves I'm talking about that broke down, they'll still add to their attack by adding someone with the quality of Delphine Cascarino. Only have a few more signings left, I promise, but speaking of Aslani, another team at NWSL was apparently interested in her, and that was the Kansas City Current. I think for the Current, the main reason why they were another one of the suitors besides San Diego is because they both had Swedish players already, so it probably would have helped Aslani feel at home, considering that she's quite close friends with both Jakobsen and Hannah Gloss. But overall, I think that the Current already have so much attacking firepower that they wouldn't have really needed Aslani. They have a lot of younger players in those roles anyway than her, and I think They've proven to the league that they're a force to be reckoned with already, and it's always a risk when you bring someone else into a team that's so successful because you don't want to rock the boat. So overall, it's good to see that Aslani is getting these offers from NWSL teams because it shows the ambitions of these clubs. But at the end of the day, Aslani just didn't really work out for either of these teams, and she's going to a good team, London City Lionesses, another team run by Michelle King. We talked about the Michelle King monopoly effect in women's football when talking about Washington. So overall, good move for both parties. The Current are such a good team already. They didn't really need reinforcements. The Wave are getting them in Cascarino. And then, of course, London City Lionesses will get their star attacking midfielder in Kosovari. But even though that move broke down with the Current, I don't think it's that big a deal because the Current already have so much attacking power in that area. The 10 roll with players like Lola Bonta and Vanessa DiBernardo. Last materialized broken down signing that we have to talk about is Katie Robinson to Gotham FC. This move was also mentioned by 90 Minutes, which makes me now question the legitimacy of the source, of course. But I do think this was an interesting move because she was following Gotham FC at the time, and a bunch of other of Gotham's players were following her, and so was Juan Carlos Amoros at one point, I'm pretty sure. But obviously now she's not following them, he's not following her, so clearly something broke down in negotiations. Even BBC is now saying in Tom Gehry that she is moving to Aston Villa on a free, which makes sense. I mean, considering that she is British, a lot of British players like staying in England for the purpose of getting selection or at another top European club. We talked about this earlier for Esme Morgan with how Serena Wiegman likes to operate, so I don't want to repeat it because it's a lot of the same logic, and you obviously all heard it if you're already here. But I think the fact of the matter is a young player like Katie Robinson wants to get consistent game time, and on a team like Villa, she'd be much more likely to get that than on a team like Gotham because we have so much more attacking depth than what Aston Villa has. And with Alicia Lehmann leaving the club, it seems like a perfect replacement to bring in a player like Katie Robinson, who's also a player who loves to play off that right-hand side. So overall, happy for Katie that she gets a chance to get in a more top club, but I am a little sad for Gotham because I'd like to see them bringing some attacking reinforcements, but we saw with San Diego, it's like a trial and error process. Even after they didn't get in two players, they brought in their third option, who was incredible and honestly my favorite of all three. So hopefully for Gotham fans like myself, we'll see them do that same exact thing. But overall, Katie Robinson is not going to Gotham FC as that move's breaking down and she's reportedly signing with Aston Villa FC. I wanted to move on to one more thing before we end the episode, and this is about the crazy LA Times article that talked about how Kristen Press, well, there was two bombshells. I want to start that. Kristen Press might return to the field during the Summer Cup, and there's two massive international signings being lined up. Those two things are both crazy to me because I thought that they would wait for Kristen to come back until they're back at BMO Stadium for the regular season. And also, I think it was surprising to me that they're bringing in more people because their roster already is quite full right now. Press returning, that means they only have one open roster spot, and this article says two signings. So that means we can expect someone from Angel City to unfortunately be cut, which is really sad, but at the end of the day, it's a big part of the sporting industry. And for Angel City, they really need enforcements, and the person getting cut would probably be someone at the back of the roster. And right now, they need someone to replace that spot and make it a lot better. The reality is that NWSL only has 26 roster spots. For many soccer teams around the world, especially if you look at the Ben side, that's not a lot. And so that means that every single player holds so much importance, even if they're not consistently playing. It's just a matter of depth, and that's what the best teams have. So for Angel City, even if a player gets benched because of these two new signings, they now just increase their depth. And that's the most important thing to being a good title team. I came up with a mystery list of a few players I think that could be part of this two collection. So I'll start with like the least prominent and move up to the most prominent. Shanice Van Descenden has recently announced that she's leaving Liverpool. And considering that Angel City needs goals, what a good option for that. She's experienced the Dutch national team. Great goal scoring option. Is still in her prime. She's a little bit older on the outskirts of her prime. She's not like super old though. That is what I'm saying. She could still be productive for this team. And they don't really have an out and out right winger because they're moving Emsley to that like 10 spot. And a lot of the time they're playing like Alyssa Thompson there, and it's just not working. So I would love to see a player like Van Descenden come in. Also, move it looking more defensively, which I don't think they need, but I mean, Shalina Zdorsky is on the market, and as a left-footed distributing center back who could play alongside Sarah Gordon, and that would be really, really good. And especially considering that we saw Paige Nielsen get traded, I was thinking that they probably had something up their sleeves for the defense. So Shalina Szczerski's still available. I wasn't going to mention her originally because I thought that she was just going to sign permanently with West Ham. But since nothing's happened yet and West Ham has signed other center backs, maybe that those negotiations fell apart and Angel City swept in there and got her. So, and considering we've seen a lot of players from the WSL and in general Europe come to the NWSL, this wouldn't be that surprising of a trend. And overall, I think this could be a really good signing for the team as they would add someone in there who could make a very good back duo with Gordon. Vane Nissan and Zorosti are two of mine, but the next three are all Lioness players. These are big players, so I'm excited to see if these would ever happen. Next, I want to talk about Katie Zellum. She's a player who's been in and out of the Lionesses lately, and she was the captain of Manchester United, and since she left there, I wouldn't be too surprised if she wanted a change in scenery. She didn't have the best last season, but at the end of the day, she would work really, really well at the NWSL because she does a lot of good things in regards to transitional play. Her biggest problem was her giveaways, which is something I would be concerned about, but honestly, for Angel City, she'd fit right in there with that category, so I wouldn't worry too much. Sorry, I always have to diss them because I'm a Gotham fan, but anyway, Zellum's still a really top quality player, and her ability to like connect in the attack is really missing. I think when I watch Angel City play against Gotham, I never really get to never watch them play full games because on the East Coast, their games are always so late. But their biggest problem was they could never, like, string together passes. It was really sad to watch, to be honest. Like, they had actually a pretty good defense. And when they got the ball, they looked okay going forward. But there was no player to, like, really connect in the midfield. The midfield was really, really bad. And I think that they bringing in a player that could be that six, like, Zellum could really help connect things. I also wanted to shout out Nikita Paris because I think this would be a great option for Angel City. She obviously rejected the offer, according to The Athletic, from North Carolina Courage that she could play in the FA Cup final. Happy that she won because it would have been depressing if she rejected a $1 million contract offer over 3 years to lose the FA Cup final. But since she's obviously out of contract now, I would not be surprised if she would reconsider an America move. The main reason why the report talked about her rejecting it was because of the FA Cup. It didn't seem like she was that appalled of the idea, or not intrigued of moving to that NWSL. So I think a club like Angel City would have the money to put in an offer for her, and considering the goals are not coming, and I talked about how the right side is a little bit weaker on Angel City this season, having her in there would be great. And then you could play up top with people like Bright and Thompson, because I think Thompson's a very talented player. The biggest problem for them though is when she gets on the ball, it feels like she's not really part of the game a lot. She never really is in the action, and bringing someone in like Nikita Paris can divert some of the attention away from Thompson, allowing her to mature and giving her an amazing role model to lead up to, as Nikita is not just known for being a great player on the pitch, but also a leader and good teammate off the field. And for someone as young as Alyssa and other young forwards in Angel City, like Casey Fair, could have someone like Nikita to look up to, which would be amazing. Last but definitely not least, even though the NWSL rumors have been silenced in the last few days or weeks with Chelsea becoming her primary destination, it's Lucy Brahms. Brahms was originally considering going to teams like Seattle and Portland, according to previous reports, in the last few years, but then she decided to go to Barcelona. So I figured if she was heavily considering a last time, what would change this time, especially considering the salary cap practically doubled without allocation money. So that's really, really exciting for the league as a whole, and also for international players, knowing that the money at the NWSL just significantly increased for them is really, really good. The starting point for these clubs to really pitch these internationals on, and I talked about this earlier, but like Ana Tejada, who's playing at a top club in Spain for Real Sociedad on the men's side, which means they have a lot of financial stability, she got paid twice that in the worst club in the league for the Royals, and that speaks magnitudes to where this league is going in comparison to the rest of the world and the investment in women's football. And a player like Lucy Brahms has the winning experience, the leadership, and overall I would love to see her in Angel City. That was kind of me just being like delusional, because there's not really been a lot of reports on who would go to Angel City directly. It's just been that like kind of underlying number that has been haunting Angel City fans. I've seen so many of them complain about like, when are we going to know who these players are? And overall, I just love these transfer episodes. It's so, so fun. I love rehashing moves. It's not like my biggest talent, to be honest. It's something I'm really growing at. I love more like
doing other stuff with the podcast, but I think I did a better job this episode than I have in the past. So I hope you really enjoy it. I hope that you can give us a 5-star review and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Tell all your friends about us, and also follow us on Instagram at the Women's Soccer Podcast, who underscores in between each word. Thank you so much for listening, and peace out from your host, LTG. See you next time. Bye.